Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stein. You're listening to the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, half hour, on Heritage Radio. We have a great program for you today. It's all about school. School food, school lunch, music in the schools, food music in the schools. But I'd like to open up this, the top of the hour, half hour, with a segment I like to call Food Poem in an English Accent.
Food poem in an English accent.
So last week we heard Matthew Tong reading two poems by Shel Silverstein. And this week, Matt's back with his friend Daniel.
Oi.
Hi, Daniel. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Daniel, tell us about your accent.
I am from the south of England, from a place called Brighton, which is outside Brighton. It's about an hour south of London, and my parents are from South London, so they've got proper sort of traditional Cockney accent. So I've got this sort of strange half country, half Sussex, half country, half Cockney. That's three halves.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's fine. That's how we do it over there.
It's a really rich accent, is what you're saying.
It's an ugly accent, to be honest.
One and a half times an accent.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a super accent.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I know you're going to go catch a plane soon. So,
yeah.
But before you go, you have two poems for us.
Uh-huh.
The first one is by Ted Berrigan. And I think a note to our listeners, there's a word in this poem which we're not going to say, and that word is Dago, which means Italian.
Although you did just say it.
I just said it, but not in the context of the poem.
Yeah.
Dago, which I think we had a pre-on-air discussion about how we're not going to say that word.
No.
And Matthew's holding his tongue and not saying it, which I applaud.
Yes, yeah. You know, it's a real act of will.
Yeah.
The word actually comes from what English sailors would call Spanish and Portuguese sailors on their ships in the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, as we all know, it's come to be a pejorative term for mostly Italians here in the United States. So that word will not be said. It modifies the word wine in the poem. And with that, here is a food poem in an English accent.
Okay, so this is Dinner at George and Katie Schneeman's. She was pretty swacked by the time she put the spaghetti and meatballs into the orgy pasta bowl. There was a mixed salt and pepper in the titty tweak pasta bowl. We drank some red from glazed, girly demi-tasse cups, after which we engaged in heterosexual intercourse, mutual masturbation, fellatio and cunnilingus. For dessert, we stared at a cupboard full of Arctic friends, graffitoed into underglazes on vases. We did have a very nice time.
That's beautiful. I don't think Ted could have said it better himself.
Amazing.
Now, the second poem is actually a poem I'd like to say I wrote, but I actually just found it. And it ties into the theme of our show, which is school lunch. Now, what I've done for you, Daniel, is I've prepared a slightly tweaked version of the September menu, which is offered by the Department of Education to 1.1 million students.
All right.
Here in New York City.
Okay.
As we'll hear later in the program, there's an alternative menu, but most of the kids will be choosing from this.
Okay.
So take it away.
Chicken tenders pizza slice, French bread pizza, Tuscan crispy chicken sandwich, crunchy tacos, mozzarella sticks, pizza slice, bagel pizza, cheese stuffed shells, burger sliders, chicken tenders, pizza slice, French bread pizza, mozzarella sticks, Philly cheesesteak sandwich, creamy ranch grilled chicken sandwich, barbecue pulled turkey on a soft roll, pizza slice. Rosh Hashanah, chicken tenders, Avi's Burgerito. It's half burger, half burrito.
I thought that was, it's beautiful.
That was like slam.
It was like a slam.
Like poetry. A sort of fried slam.
before you go, what did you guys eat growing up in your schools?
My mum made me sandwiches. So what? It was a standard thing. It would have been salami in white bread. I can do it in a poacher style if you like.
Yeah, please.
Salami in white bread. Trio. Fruit and Nut Club. Quavers. Capri Sun.
In that order, you had the quavers after the biscuit.
Yeah, no, I always, that was the thing.
What's a quaver?
Quaver is a crisp. It's like an air, you know, like pop chips you have here.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of mid-80s, not healthy in any way version of that. Although, obviously, I would like to point out that they may be healthy. I've got no idea.
I'm sure no trans fats or anything.
Yeah, I'm sure. And a trio and a club or a small sort of three-section chocolate bar.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Matthew?
I had packed lunches for a brief period when my dad was unemployed. I got free lunches in the school canteen. But if I were to do it in the style of Dan, doing it in the style of slam poetry, I would be mighty white shrimp paste.
Mm. Mm.
Wheat crunchies.
Mm. Tomato flavour.
Boxes cream. Müller corner.
That's a
Robinson's barley water.
That's a far classier lunch than I would have had.
That's a shrimp paste. Is adventurous.
Yeah, it is.
I had my enemy in my class, Paul, would quite often throw my packed lunch off the balcony in the school hall, and unbeknownst to me, I would open it, and my Müller corner would have exploded everywhere: creamy yogurt and strawberry puree.
Wait, he'd throw the lunch and then retrieve it.
He just thought I'd find my lunch bag on the floor, and I'd be like, I think that was probably Paul. And in the end, I tip-exed a mean note to Paul on my lunch bag that asked him to not do that. But he
that persisted. Seems quite polite, actually. Please don't throw me.
Please.
I've been over 6 foot since I was about 12, so no one ever did anything to my lunch.
No one fucked with your quavers.
Yeah, well, they better not have. I'm still coming after them if they did.
Okay, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now go and catch your flight. Bye, Matthew. I'll see you soon. So now we're going to move into the segment of the program. Oh, maybe I should do the theme song once more.
Food poem in an English accent.
Great. So for my last column for the New York Observer, I actually went into a school and I reviewed a school lunch. Now, you might say, and the Department of Education certainly agrees, that a school lunch is not a restaurant and shouldn't be written about in that context. But I think the point that I wanted to make in reviewing the school lunch is it's one of the most important meals, if not the most important meal in the city. I'm going to read a little bit of the review, and then we're going to bring on a guest who has intimate knowledge of school lunches. At 11:30 a.m. every school day for the next 9 months, 860,000 children will sit down or squirm about or fidget over a city-provided lunch. That's a lot of covers. It would take Momofuku Ko nearly a century to feed that many mouths. School lunch is like all of China jumping on the culinary scene at once. It's orbit shifting for the lives of the students and, because they are the future, for us too. So I'm undercover in a school, cramped in a small box, although I can't go into details. I don't want to blow my cover. But my lunch appears. And if I'm being vague about how it did or where I am, call it discretion, for the wrath of the Department of Education is awesome and terrible. At any rate, there I am, alone with the elusive school lunch, or at least part of it. The black beans, an important component, since they constitute the USDA-mandated daily vegetable, are missing. Instead, there's a generous scoop of brown rice, whole grains being pushed since 2010, and a large mountain of chicken bits. To each lightly browned piece of meat clung bits of garlic and pepper and chunks of tomato. There's even a bit of spice. Nothing offensive, but a little intriguing. Hints of cumin, chili powder, and oregano. And though pre-cooked, the meat was tender and moist. Not bad at all. There's a modicum of deliciousness in this bureaucratic cooking. At a restaurant, which again, this is not, I'd say the lunch is a double bogey. But here, it's an eagle. So I end up giving it 3 out of 5 stars. Precisely because the recipe manages to negotiate the bureaucracy and come up with something that's more than edible. It tastes really good. Now, one of the people who contributed to the creation of that recipe, which for the record is called Texas Chicken Chili, is Bill Telepan, who's a chef here in New York City with 2 well-regarded restaurants, and he is very involved in school lunch. Bill, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Pretty well. I want to recite the recipe in my British accent, if you'd like.
Oh, can you do a credible British accent?
Okay. Oh, indeed I can. You think it's doing one right now, right?
It's like Mary Poppins.
Exactly. That's where I get it from.
Let's talk about school lunch. So you have a fine dining background, and then you also help develop recipes, although you can characterize your involvement in the programs better than I can. But you're active in this culinary world, which couldn't be more removed from fine dining. Tell me how you got into it.
Well, Nancy Easton, who's the executive director of wellness in the schools, and a couple other moms were handing out sandwiches that they created with the school food manager that they wanted to serve on the lunch line. And they were healthier sandwiches right now. You know, basically they serve American cheese sandwiches or peanut butter and jelly. So they did these like chicken Caesar wrap and this Asian tofu wrap. And my wife and I were going to my daughter's parent-teacher conference, and I knew them, so I said, hey, and I grabbed something to eat because I always eat. And I ate them on my way upstairs, and on my way back down, I said, I congratulate them. They were delicious, and I just said, how can I help? So I started attending some of their wellness committee meetings in the schools, which is like once a month, which if all schools can have or are mandated to have a wellness committee across the nation. So I attended these meetings, and after a while, I figured, like, you know, they didn't really do much, so I was, like, thinking, how can I really get involved? And so I visited the cafeteria and had this brainstorm one day. I said, well, why don't we do some days where I come in and cook? And I got the recipe book, and they had a vegetarian chili recipe that I modified and made it more cleaner, for lack of a better word. We did a salad bar day because all the schools right now, most of them have salad bars, and it was pretty weak when I saw it originally and didn't get enough love. And so I was going to do an enhanced salad bar, and then we were.
But you can't really just waltz into a cafeteria, right? I mean, I think one of the things that I came across in this piece is how difficult that bureaucracy is to negotiate. So how did you go about modifying, you know?
Well, we asked originally to go in. I just said, can I go in and do these days? And you know, because they were working closely with, well, at that time, which was only 3 schools. So they did get the attention of the DOE. But so we just asked. And I told them what we were going to do. And I said I would do all the work and not make anybody else do it. I just wanted to see how it would fly. And so it flew really well, and I had volunteers come and help me. Some moms who, like this one mom in particular, who was studying at the FCI at the time. And then WITS was also involved in 2 other schools. So we went and did it in those 2 schools. And the following year, they grew to 8 schools, and I did the same thing. But this time, I had a team of volunteers that would go and help me in each individual school, who had some culinary experience. So we did these 3 days in those schools, and along the time I was developing recipes that we could do. Now, the thing is, in the schools, you have these modified kitchens, and most of them, which is basically 2 convection ovens, a steamer, and maybe a burner or 2. And through that, I was able to create these recipes, knowing that in most schools, even if they had 10 burners or so, they just didn't have the pots or anything to cook that large quantity, say for 500-600 kids. So, and then by the end of the year, we put together what was a monthly menu of recipes that I created through that time, and we decided to go into 10 more, or we wanted to up it to 20. We really wanted to jump into it, but do it sort of along the line the way they do with Teach for America. So, you know, Teach for America gets the brightest people to go into these, you know, the hardest areas to teach. We wanted to bring in these culinary school graduates to help us along and teach the cooks how to cook again, and also teach, you know, and just sort of spread the healthy wellness word.
You had said something about how the workers in the school cafeteria, there's kind of been an attrition of their duties and their skills.
Yes.
At this point, they're not even really cooking. They're heating things up, not even seasoning, just microwaving.
Well, they weren't microwaving. They were heating things in the convection oven. And there was light cooking. Like, they would have to cook rice once in a while, but it was pretty basic recipes. But the thing is, some of them had been in the system for many, many years. And there was one woman I cooked with who said, oh, we're going to be cooking again, because I used to many years ago. And so there was, you know, some resistance to it. But with the way we do it is we go in there and we train them over time. It's not like, you know, you got to do this in 1 week and make it happen. I mean, that would be unfair to them. And so it's a matter of not only teaching them how to cook, but also how to prepare and mise en place, you know, themselves. Get ready, how to be ready to make a chili for 600 in a day. You
right.
can't just come in that morning at 7 o'clock and knock it out. You have to sort of cut the vegetables one day, 2 days before, cook them, make the chili the day before, and this way you could just heat it up.
And what do you think the biggest challenge is working with the DOE? I understand
well,
that
the
you have
thing
to...
The DOE, they have to feed a million kids for $1 a day without getting them sick and using these products that the federal government is mandating them to use.
The purveyor list.
Yeah, purveyor or procurement list.
Procurement list.
And so and also have to meet all these nutritional guidelines, right? So they're up against a lot, and they have a lot of, you know, so in that regard, just going by the dollar, I mean, you know, you get this commodity meat in, and you have to figure out ways to, you know, stretch it, so in order to feed more kids. And so they have done things in the past, and also the labor cost issue is high, much higher in New York. See, New York City gets the same amount of money as, say, Tulsa, Oklahoma, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the cost of living and cost of labor and the cost of everything in Tulsa is much lower than it is in New York City. So take that into account. You know, they have to really work with a dollar. And, it's kind of crazy how that is.
The thing that I think is so mind-boggling is, you know, in food media, we spill... In the world where you think about how things taste, we write so much about restaurants with such little capacity. And no one, it's very rare that someone in my world, in the critical world, looks at a meal, which by the numbers is by far the most common meal for the majority of New Yorkers. For the majority of New Yorkers, 860,000, I think.
Yeah.
And even this menu that you're talking about, I think I should make clear that that's the alternative menu. The menu that's in, there's maybe 80 schools, 70 or 80 schools that have the alternative menu.
Yeah.
The
60
other,
of them are the schools that Wellness and the schools are in.
Right. And 1,640 schools or something like that have the standard menu, which, as we heard in that poem up front, chicken tenders, pizza slice, bagel pizza. You know, it's a very... constrained sort of menu.
Well, I think partly they may try to make it kid friendly because I guess the idea is that that's the kind of food kids want to eat. They also have to provide a vegetable every day, a piece of fruit every day now under the new federal regulation. So those things are generally things they have to cook. So they do get a lot of good fresh vegetables in. And now that all except 100 schools in the city, and the reasons for that is because they just may not have the space to do it, have salad bars. And so those have...
Which they don't get reimbursed from.
They don't get reimbursed, but it's a good way to get the kids introduced to more vegetables in their day. So, those are the things. But what I've been seeing in the last 5 years or so with school food, it's just been a really good change. Even though you still have those items on the menu... They have been introducing items that are a little different, have a little fun. There is a penne pasta available that they can have. But a lot of it is that they have to make this one menu that has to go across the board for these 1,700 schools. And it's difficult because of the USDA regulations to capture this money. They have to sort of all be precise and be the same.
The last question I have for you, Bill, is, how, if at all, has your experience in the schools and in school cafeterias affected your fine dining kind of experience?
Well, and I guess in some of the trials, we've had some pretty banging staff meals when we were testing some of the recipes, but it hasn't affected at all.
Okay.
There's no change. Actually, you know, well, the one thing is that, you know, I always think about is getting the best ingredient possible, getting the best ingredient possible. And I think what we've been able to do is, with Wellness to the School, is sort of bring ideas on how to get better ingredients into the schools. And there's a lot of things going on now nationwide with school food, like the New York City paired with five others of the largest school districts to increase their buying power so they could reduce costs so they could get better products in the school. So there is a lot of great things happening, and people are thinking about it, and they're trying to make a difference.
Okay, thank you so much, Chef.
My pleasure.
And I will talk to you soon.
All right, cheers.
We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back with Mark DeZula and the Magic Caravan.
Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Redwattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew W.K. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stein, and you're listening to the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, half hour. Welcome back to the second half. We have a wonderful musical guest here, Mark DeZula from Magic Caravan, for a section we like to call Now a Musical Guest Plays a Song or Two.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Mark. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing really well. So we've been talking about school and school food the entire program, and you are the perfect musical guest, as you are an educator, a musician, and a lot of your songs have to do with food.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Tell me about your project Magic Caravan in the schools and how food plays a part in that.
Okay. Magic Caravan was kind of a multimedia puppet show, and it really was done less in schools. We changed that into Jukebox Radio, which is more kid-friendly. Magic Caravan was kind of more for adults. And
right,
and
but I was a kid when I liked it, I guess. So, yeah, let's talk about Jukebox Radio. I'm sorry, go on.
Okay, yeah, Jukebox Radio, we work with museums. We do things at family days. We highlight exhibitions, themes in exhibitions, and we do things with music, with shadow puppets, with projections. And the funny thing is that very family-friendly show grew out of this more kind of outre strange show called The Magic Caravan, where I guess we're more familiar with each other.
And tell me about, so you're also a teacher, or you were a teacher in New York, actually, for a while.
Yeah, I started as a teacher in the Bronx, and now I work at a boarding school in California. So those two moves are pretty significant. And I don't know if you'd like me to talk about it, but the food is very different in both places, too.
How so?
Interestingly, in the Bronx, it was an elementary school. We'd go down into the basement to eat in the cafeteria, and teachers would have to pay. And I remember feeling like the meal was expensive enough that it would be more worth your money to go to the bodega and get a cheese sandwich or something like that, because it was much cheaper.
How much were the lunches?
The teacher lunches, they had to have been at least $5 to $7, and I feel like that's from my memory. I just remember being put off by the price, and I only got lunch maybe once or twice, and I was surprised that we had to pay.
And what were the kids eating?
They would eat things kind of like that first menu that you read for poetry: tacos, pizza. The funny thing, I don't know if it's funny, but the kids disliked peanut butter and jelly, which was surprising to me. And so they'd always think that
was the
staple
of childhood. Yeah,
the gross choice.
And now in San Diego.
Now I live in Claremont in LA County, and so we don't have to pay for lunch. It's at a boarding school, so all three meals are provided if you'd like it. I don't live on campus, so I don't have to be here for dinner, but I can bring my wife and my son for breakfast. It's buffet style as well, but there's lots of different choices. There's also many more desserts here than there were in the Bronx. Every meal has some kind of cookie or brownie or some kind of sugar and starch.
Right. I wonder if the private school is beholden to the USDA regulations.
I don't think so. It's a private company that comes in and kind of makes do. The legend that I've heard is that this is the first 2 years that we've had this particular program, and people are very happy with it. In the past, it was much more like camp food, where you'd first have, on Monday, chicken fried steak. On Tuesday, country fried steak, so that chicken fried steak with gravy.
Right.
And you'd have a chicken fried steak parmesan, and then by the end, it would be chopped up and thrown on lettuce.
Well, it is efficient, I guess.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I wanted to mention before you hear some songs, is you had said earlier that a lot of the songs of Jukebox Radio and that you used in the schools kind of dealt with food. Did you feel like the kids outside of the lunch context, how did they relate to food? I mean, they were interested in it?
Yeah, well, food's delicious, and I think the other thing is, where do you get food? So if you're not in the cafeteria, another place to go is the bodega. Mm-hmm. So what kind of food you're getting there is a good question. So things like candy is huge and delicious. And I think the things we would do with Magic Caravan had a lot to do with kind of comfort foods, things from that, not from the alternative venue. So we would make jokes about pizza or have songs about ice cream and things like that.
Well, we're going to hear a song about ice cream, but I'd like to open up with actually a song from your album called The Joy of Cooking. This is a Magic Caravan song called The Joy of Cooking, and this album is called In Smell-O-Vision?
In Smell-O-Vision. We wanted to bring something new to the medium.
Okay, here we go.
I was looking through an old cookbook, searching for a wheat bread recipe. There I saw my girlfriend's tongue and her ex-boy's bread, captured in a color. In the joy of cooking.
Mark DeZula, you rock so hard.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it.
Oh, hold on. There's more. Sorry. That's Tim the Drunk Puppeteer.
Yeah.
Is that a true story? I have to ask.
That was a true story. I also want to add that's not an educational song that I would really sing with children.
Although it is educational in many ways.
It did come out at the same time. When I started teaching in the Bronx, I was dating a girl, and she moved in with me, and I was baking one night, and I was going through The Joy of Cooking looking for a good wheat bread recipe, and I did. I found a color Kodak photograph of her and her ex-boyfriend, and it prompted me to write a song.
Yeah, that's not where you want to see it.
Yeah.
Did you ever find that recipe?
No, I didn't cook that night. I sat down and wrote a song.
Serves her right. The next song we're going to play is called Helado. Tell me a little bit about this song.
When I was in the Bronx, I was starting to use Spanish a lot more with my students, and I was having a lot of fun singing songs in Spanish with kids. At the same time, I was pursuing a different girl, and she was kind of being very cold to me, and I felt like I was being like the sun, really way too hot and overbearing, and she was like, "Hey, cool it. I don't like you."
She was
so
the ice cream.
This song is supposed to be from the point of view of the sun to an ice cream. I think what I gave you is part one. Part two, the ice cream says, "No way, Jose."
That's not exactly a happy ending, but here we go. This one is called Helado.
Cuando hace mucho calor, tiene buen sabor.
y me canta como si fuera el diablo. Poco, estás volviéndome loco. No es justo, mi amor, no lo puedo soportar.
Cha-cha-pum.
Eres mi vida, mi amor y mi alma helado.
Mark,
sorry. Right on. Yeah,
yeah, that was great. Did that work?
Did it work? Yeah, I ended up marrying the girl who the song was written for.
On that note, Mark DeZula from Magic Caravan, jukebox radio educator extraordinaire. Thank you so much for being here today.
Josh, thanks for having me. A real pleasure.
Of course. I'll talk to you later. And that was a segment called "A Musician Plays a Song or Two." I think it has a theme song.
That was just a musical guest.
And that's it for our show today. This is Joshua David Stein from Joshua David Stein's Variety Hour, half hour on Heritage Radio. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.